Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
Beep.
Beep. Beep.
You gonna start whistling Go Rock and Robin? Go right ahead.
No.
Come on, Mackie.
No.
You know there was feedback that needed you to have more singing.
It's true.
All right, which of you added that feedback?
It
wasn't me. You asked that last year, too, and I'm pretty sure it was absolutely none of us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 273. We are joined by Dan Quick.
Now in living color.
Makalua.
Now not the only coffee drinker since someone got his internets back.
The Mean Team.
I also drink coffee. Come on now.
And, of course, myself, Matt Jin. Wait, so I have to have internet to have coffee? Is that it? Was that your logic?
No, you just don't count because you're not on the internet otherwise.
Okay, Phil drinks coffee, but it's not a thing he's known for, unlike you. So,
just so they don't talk about it. So. But I probably drink 2 cups a day on average, at least during work days.
2 cups?
Two cups.
Let me guess, do you have the little thumb up in the corner, little teacup?
If only I were so unreliant on caffeine. If only. That'd be nice, actually. I wish you were right.
Aztecs are out. 90 days is up. For all of you who didn't pre-order, you can have the Aztecs. Have fun.
Yep, for those of us that did have the Aztecs in the meantime, we left you some Aztecs to play with.
Oh, this is funny, and it amuses me, because there's a lot of hate and salt out there. For all of you people who got yourself all hyped up thinking that something was going to come with the Aztecs, go back and double check to see if anybody actually ever said that, other than yourselves. Getting mad that Fraxis didn't give you something at the same time as the Aztecs. No one ever promised you anything other than the Aztecs on day 90. Just saying.
If you can prove that they didn't listen, that they didn't even consider what it is that the community was saying, that's one thing. But when they don't say they're going to do something, and then they don't do it, that doesn't mean they broke a promise that they didn't tell you about, because they didn't make a promise, or they didn't make a commitment. It doesn't work like that. Or at least it shouldn't, and I'm glad it doesn't.
Yeah, not so much.
Without fail, no matter what you do, or what you do, don't say, or do say, you will piss people off for legitimate and illegitimate reasons.
Anyway. Oh, this one's totally illegitimate.
Civ 6 coming to Linux has been announced. Aspermedia saying that it's coming to Linux. I've heard that it's coming to Linux like on release day too, but that didn't happen. So maybe this time it'll actually happen.
New announcement.
Yeah, well, it would have been nice when my hard drive failed. That had my Windows installation. I had to get my new hard drive back, so I was running on Linux for a while. I do have a dual install still, and Mac can actually play. So that's that. Is there an announce date on this? I don't see a date set.
This is literally another announcement.
What's the point of this?
Yeah, I mean,
that we haven't forgotten about you, but we're not putting in much effort either.
Please keep sending us chocolate cookies.
Yes, yes, that was part of the announcement.
Feed the programmers more Tim Tams; they're more efficient that way.
Yeah, the Vice President of Publishing, Elizabeth Howard, for Aspyr, said, besides daily inquiries asking for Civ 6, we've also received 12 dozen warm chocolate chip cookies, as well as squishy Linux Penguins toys for the entire office. We talked about the cookies before, but I don't remember any talk about Penguin toys.
No. It is like a Linux symbol penguins. Or whatever, so that's why they're sending the penguins along with the
cookies.
Send
in the penguins!
It's like a symbolic message. You get something, you get the penguin, do it, but we'll see if they actually do it.
I think it's already been said, though, why they're excited to bring Civilization VI to Linux is because they keep getting all of these goodies because they say it's actually going to be arriving. But if they release it, then people are going to be too busy playing the game to send them free stuff. So I think this was just a reiteration that they are enjoying the freebies. And that's too bad, because if you go to the Frequently Asked Questions page, it has still not been updated. The question about, is Civ 6 available for Linux? Linux is still being investigated as a project. We hope to have clarity in the coming months on if a viable version of Civ 6 can make it to Linux. So, I'm like,
I love the honesty, lol.
On if.
Be supported on release, remember that?
Yep.
Well,
then again, the user interface is in alpha, so I guess they have to focus on that first.
On Facebook, in response to the Civilization 6 maybe coming out on Linux, one person responded, "No!" in all caps, and Sid Meier's Civilization responded, "More people being able to play a game is a bad thing?" His response, "No special reason, I just felt like saying no."
He's just reacting to 2016 in general now that it's over. No, thank you! No, get out!
Is it the fact that Aspire's blog is updated by marketing, but the FAQ is updated by the tech department?
You know,
they're the ones that are telling the truth still.
You have good process, though. This kind of stuff doesn't happen as often. This is kind of not good from a marketing perspective, but whatever.
And, of course, the next item also has to do with Aspire and questionable processes.
At least we have something tangible when it comes to that, yeah.
So now the winter update is over on, bleh, for the Mac players.
What, speaking of no, the update is out for Mac players.
Sure, speaking of no, none for you. Oh, no, wait, actually, yes, some for you.
Now Mac users, too, can enjoy the one step forward, two step back. That is the patch PC players have been enjoying. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, and you can play games on the Earth map and all those other fun things, and now you get Poland and scenarios. Dan, why did you introduce this as a questionable thing? Because it took them longer than 2.5 seconds to translate it to Mac?
Oh, the fact that Mac and PC doesn't necessarily work on multiplayer?
Yeah, that's still a thing. You know, it's one thing to say that a patch has come out. It's going to come out from Fraxis and 2K first, and then it's going to be a delay. And Aspire was upfront with that on their FAQ page, that there was going to be a delay. So during that window, if PC and Mac can't play, it's frustrating, but it's understandable. However, it doesn't matter what version the Mac and the PC players are running, they still can't play. On the Aspire FAQ, the question is, and cross-platform multiplayer, can I play versus my PC friends? Answer, quote, yes, comma, you will soon be able to challenge.
I'll soon.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You answered with yes, but yes, no. Gosh.
Yes, but
yes,
no.
Yes, but no.
Yes, but no.
And then there's a little asterisk beside it, and then italics underneath. Please note the cross-platform multiplayer with Windows PC may not always be available, including at time of launch. There will be times when the Windows PC version of the game receives an update prior to the version of the game. This will temporarily prohibit Mac players from playing with Windows PC players. Once the version of Civilization VI receives the same update, cross-platform multiplayer with Windows PC will be re-enabled. It's enabled, It just doesn't work. Okay, well.
Yeah. That's where we are. It's technically enabled, but it's technically not working. Technically incorrect. The best kind of incorrect.
We received more feedback on our 2016 Christmas special. Comments on civfanatics.com, their news area, which is, of course, separate from the forums now, which requires a separate account. From Illiterist, this was a good listen, even though I haven't played Civ 6, and at the moment it seems a right behavior till they improve user interface and artificial intelligence. The fact that you haven't played Civilization 6 and you enjoyed our show really is just a testament to how wonderful and brilliant podcasters we are. I think I should just stop the feedback at that. And, oh, wait, there was more? Oh.
No, Dan.
Mackie's right. No, Dan, there wasn't any more feedback. Good, from Illiterist. We can go on to the next one. Oh, wait, there was? Oh. One of the things Civ designers neglect to do in terms of AI is shaping rules of the game to support AI. I'm not talking about a decision of switching to one unit per tile system and then realizing it cripples the AI. I'm talking about false choices that humans don't take into account, but the AI thinks it has to. Mm-hmm. If Paradox...
Yeah.
Oh. They said the word.
Oh, they said a dirty word.
If Paradox designed a Civilization V Brave New World, you wouldn't have dozens of cities to choose for trade. You probably have one city per civilization in list, and only city-states with trade requests available, as choosing other options would be suboptimal in most cases. They lower the amount of available buildings for a city, hiding many of them behind special conditions so the AI doesn't have to think about them. Wait. Civ 6 did that with districts, but the district system itself is very hard to use for the AI. This design process is kind of like a multiplayer game, without working multiplayer.
No, multiplayer works better than you.
Well, he's saying it's like a multiplayer game without working multiplayer. I mean, multiplayer does work in Civilization VI, with, again, the exception of between Mac and PC. That doesn't work.
It's like some versions of Madden, basically.
His comments about the trade route thing was kind of weird. I don't know if it's considered false choices to have options to send things to rather than just one. Although he might have been being sarcastic at that point.
No, a false choice in that sense is something that you would never do, because the way the game is tuned right now, it's never advantageous compared to an alternative option. So you won't do it. But the AI will still do it sometimes.
Yeah, but you're not going to have like one city per civ as a trade option. You're not going to go, oh, this is the absolute best place, so that's the only place I'm going to send it. Because that's not always where you want to send it. Maybe you want to send it to the closer city so that you can have a road to it so that you can go conquer it. Or maybe you want to connect through to a different place because there's better cities for trade off on, say, to your left rather than to your right. The idea of that, given that it is a directed web style, is false, actually. I think the suggestion on that is false because you're not going to have the best city per civ and then that's it. And only city-states with trade requests available, really? Is that the only time you're going to send a trade route to them? What if they give you better stats than all the other crappy cities around you?
Oh, yeah.
So, I think...
The game doesn't only have false choices, but there is some.
I think the suggestion here was a false choice.
Perhaps.
I also think another false choice with options is if you choose option A or B, then the response is the same. I think about Civilization V specifically, when an AI would contact you, it would be like, hey, stop doing what it is that you're doing. And you had two choices, but it didn't matter which one you said. Nothing changed.
That's a false choice, because there's literally no choice.
And you've wasted my time, because it seems like there is a choice, and I also have to make a choice, because it's on screen. I can't actually not make a false choice and continue to play the game. Wow.
Yep.
War Chief Servant says, came here because I want to buy and play Civilization VI. I think you mean by coming here to Civilization Fanatics. We at Polycast, we do not sell Civilization VI. But if we did, you could still send me some money. he says, however, if the game sucks and has no hope of improving, I just won't touch it till it's dirt cheap. I like the notion that you would pay for a game that sucks and has no hope of improving if it was dirt cheap, as opposed to just not touching it at all. Maybe just do it for the lulz.
The UI doesn't work. It tells you things that won't happen. I want to attack this unit. Hey, look, it shows me I'm going to do a ranged attack. Nope. That kind of stuff needs to not be in the game. Or next turn does not equal next turn. That needs to not be in the game.
What? What are you talking about?
You hit next turn and it doesn't go to the next turn.
Three more units you need to move. You need to decide this thing first.
Yeah.
That is annoying.
It doesn't say unit needs orders or order units or anything. It just says next turn. So you hit that and you don't notice.
It's not actually next turn.
Oh, that's just post-move.
Or why can't I build this unit? Yeah. Well, sometimes it tells you. Sometimes it just doesn't have the unit. There's just some conditions under which the unit option doesn't appear. And there's some where it will tell you why you can't build the unit properly. Why is this inconsistent? Why does ranged attack equal moves toward the enemy and not actually attack at all?
That specifically is because you chose to right-click rather than bring up the ranged attack overlay to show you that you could not actually ranged attack. Yep, exactly what that is.
When you have two different outcomes, the UI needs to display that there will be a different outcome, not show you the same thing that would happen any other time you'd use it. That is an objective flaw, and it is a problematic flaw. Because now you're asking the user to double up his inputs to do basic attacks or pay attention to something.
You're using a shortcut to do a basic attack, so if you're using the shortcut, you should know how that unit works.
You just said use the shortcut to do a basic attack, and the display said you'll do a basic attack, but then you didn't.
Because you couldn't have, because you just right-clicked. You didn't go, so can I attack you?
Move. The game knows that you're going to move. You move when you click, so where's that indication? Why is this such a chore?
Because you just hit right-click rather than anything else.
Yeah, bullshit. And I will call bullshit on anybody. I will say it to a dev's face. That is bullshit. That's not okay.
So what you want is that when you click a unit, that if you move the cursor anywhere on the map, it'll automatically, contextually, sensitively decide exactly what you wanted to do with that square on the map, including going, mouse oh, hey, look over, at all this other stuff.
If you mouse over a unit with a ranged unit that is in your range and hold down right click, it should show you whether you are moving or attacking. It should not be in doubt. And right now, you can get different outcomes to the exact same display. And that is not okay in a game.
No, because right-click is not the button you're supposed to be pressing to find out. Ranged attack is the button you're supposed to press to find out, not right-click. Right-click is the shortcut. You're actually bypass the layer that shows you whether or not you can attack or if you have to move.
Yeah, so fix your display so that there's a possibility of two outcomes there. At least show.
Okay, so I'll make this easy on you. We'll just delete the right-click to attack button. Then you actually have to use the proper keys.
Yeah, let's add more inputs to the user than already, because it's not enough to have the trade screen demand that we're constantly renewing our trade routes rather than automating that. And we can't have a city list like Civ 4 had. We can't have a trade list similar to that city list. Right. To queue up a unit? No, we can't queue up stuff. And it takes triple the inputs of previous games, too, to queue up units. Let's just add more. Let's make it take two clicks every time we want to attack with the unit, because we can't make the shortcut display what's going to actually happen. No. No.
As Candace Albina says in the chat, if the shortcut doesn't work properly, it's broken. Well, yes. Either fix it or remove it. War Chief Servant says, was hoping something more from these guys. Wanted them to properly answer the first question, the main reason why I was here, in regards to fixing the artificial intelligence. So he is talking about us. What we've stated is more or less commonplace knowledge. We know that it's harder to make more smarter and challenging and fun to play with or against the AI in 4X games without making turn timers exceedingly long. What I'm here for is whether we, yes, can propose or know if the developers will propose a solution to difficulty adjustment. Not a cheating AI that the harder the difficulty, the more buffs they have, but rather an actual intelligent AI that was more fun to play with or against, like in Civilization 4. Man, this has been a recurring topic on the show in terms of how do we improve the AI? Do we give them buffs or aka derp bonuses as we talk about on the show because they're not as intelligent as humans, so we're going to help try to stack the deck a little bit? Or are we actually going to try to improve the intelligence of the artificial intelligence, which I think they would very much like it to be the latter, but practically speaking, we're not there yet.
Wasn't it partially a term of the limitations of how much memory and stuff they can use on a modern computer? They could make an intelligent AI. Yeah, and processing.
No, that's all false flag / red herring. Because really, it's not that hard to make it better. The real problem of Civ 6 AI is that they didn't put enough people on the AI coding side. On top of that, if you have a design that's constantly changing, it's hard to hit a target. When that design changes, then the AI has to change. And if the design's changing all the way down to the end for release, then the AI is not keeping up. That's also partly design of the AI, if it can't keep up to design changes. But yes, it can get better, and obviously it probably will, because even if you look at Civ 5 AI, it eventually got better. Is it going to be super awesome? Probably not, because it's not worth the money to make it super awesome, but can it be better? Yep. There are many systems in here that could be replaced with things that don't give the AI derp bonuses, and it's just a matter of actually doing it. There shouldn't be that many people just going do-do-do-do-do on Deity.
It took me 6 days to routinely win on Deity.
Yeah. That shouldn't happen.
I don't think it was technically that, but close enough.
It's not a question of, okay, so how are you able to do this? Well, because the AI sucks. Well, no, because there's design problems that made it way too easy in a lot of different areas. So there's design issues
feel like
here. There's balance
do it
issues.
Strong. The AI should be able to do it.
Yeah.
In principle.
Well, it's a question of, did the AI get tuned to do what the mechanic was meant to do, or did it get tuned to look for broken stuff?
Well, it's basically the AI can't fight. That's how it's been for a while. You can win with a couple archers and like a melee unit or two.
Yeah, but that's a design problem. Why can archers shoot walls?
You don't even need archers to do that. You can just kill all the AI's units and then it's hosed.
Well,
there's a fundamental issue there because the AI, with more than double your units, you can easily shred that.
Yeah, well, that comes to the problem of archer range strength versus melee strength versus why are swordsmen a billion times more powerful than spearmen? There's a unit balance problem in there on top of everything else.
Absolutely.
MP
shows that really clearly.
And then there's other issues like district choices. Why were certain mechanics chosen for cost scalers that make it harder on the AI? And again, there's actually one that makes it harder on the AI. AI is basically tuned to hyper spam its way to the information era as fast as it possibly can, straight through computers, rather than go wider and pick up stuff, which basically means it's forcing its way through the tech eras faster, increasing its cost for districts faster, and everything else faster. So,
I would say that's clearly a design problem, and really was a crappy design independent of AI.
Oh, no, but yeah, just one of those problems.
I very much expect that eventually we will see more coming from the modding community to improve the artificial intelligence, but we've got two major limitations here. First off are the limited modding tools that are available and what they can get access to. And second of all, the game is still in development. We know we still have at least a couple of more DLC to go, and I could see some people saying it's either a little too soon to try to improve the artificial intelligence, or if we do that, are we then prepared to then respond to updates to the game? And the fact that they don't have access to the tools that they really need to even do that for the game right now, they're looking at other modifications within the existing game structure, and we'll get that more in-depth AI boost that we saw in Civilization 5, and I would say Civilization 4, speaking about the better AI coming next, but that's also going to be a year upon year upon year project, even long after this game is no longer in development.
Again, that's the moving target thing. Even for modders, if the base game code keeps changing, they have to keep changing their mods. So yes, after the game has stopped, then they'll have a much better base, but no, there's people already working on AI mods. Small, easy stuff. Not the big stuff. If you're talking modders, because I don't think they were talking modders in this case, I think they were just talking straight up dev. But modder-wise, yeah, they need the modding tools in the DLL. Otherwise, nothing gonna happen. Back in Civ 4, it was also much more limited on the hardware side. So
that's
now
true.
That we're at...
So that goes to his point about compensating it for somewhat with the design. Because Civ 4, as a design game, is easier to make an AI that can kill you.
Oh,
there's just it's more difficult to handle 50 units when they can be on one tile. It's as simple as that. And so that was more threatening.
I prefer the better design and then make the AI suit the design, not design suit the AI.
You need a little of both, and you need to decide where you're putting the line.
I mentioned modders specifically as compared to the developers and publishers, which you're right, that's what Warchief's Servant is getting at here. And it kind of goes with the moving target that I think the Civ community over the long run is going to be more tolerant of the moving target in the sense of trying to refine the AI than the developers or publishers will, because we're not on a timeline, and by we, the Civ community, in order to make those changes and to test those changes and...
We don't have shareholders to make happy.
Yes, exactly. This is not my saying that, well, you should just wait for the modders to do it and the developers and publishers shouldn't be trying to fix issues. That's not the case, because whatever the developers or the publishers fix, then that gets pushed out to Civ players, including modders, and then they don't have to try to do that as well. It's just, I feel like what this person is getting at, especially when they mention Civilization 4, and I think about the extensive AI rewriting that happened in Civilization 4, and I'm pretty sure what Warchief's Servant want is going to come later, and it's not going to come from the developers or the publishers, because at some point they're going to be on to Civ Next or whatever other title they're working on next.
Well, I mean, it's a function of what's the important part of a 4X strategy game. And the people who like to play single player will tell you that 90% of it will be the AI.
Yeah.
And the multiplayer people saying multiplayer balance and design, yada, yada, yada. And the devs will be saying, yeah, let's just get this out and sell it a lot.
Civilization. They won't say that publicly, but
yeah. Somebody somewhere is going to be saying it.
Well, I'm still waiting for the patch that just makes the game multiplayer only and eliminates the whole AI consideration whatsoever. That will save a lot of time in development, you know.
It'll get rid of a lot of complaints. Like, you know what? You people.
It'll get rid of complaints, but it'll probably be met with them more. But it will get rid of certain complaints, at least.
Yep.
And seeing as how the majority of Civ players are completely, if not primarily, focused on single player, then the number of players will drop, and in turn, the absolute value of complaints will be lessened.
No, they'll just all learn how to play against other people.
They won't all know.
Even though we're that many more steps ahead on Civilization VI release as compared to Civilization V, given the path that they took with Civilization V, as long as it took to get some considerable updates, including but not limited to the AI, and the fact that the Civ community grew, and those who were frustrated with it at some point, a lot of them eventually came back and or got newer players to play it. And when you look at the most popular games being played on Steam, Civilization V is still frequently in the top 10, even though it's been 6 years since initial release and more than 3 years since the last substantial update. Feeling like we're going to follow a similar pattern, the good thing is that 2K and Firaxis have kind of accelerated that timeline because of how much better Civ 6 is upon release than Civ 5.
So what was our feedback?
Spreadsheet gargling. Because Dan mentioned this.
Why am I not surprised Mackie decided to bring this comment up first? Please read the, go ahead and read the whole kit and caboodle.
One of our comments was, if there's one thing that causes me to stop listening to an episode, it's the stuff at the beginning and who has been on how many episodes with them, dating back to who. Normal in-episode back and forth between the hosts is fun, but introductory spreadsheet gargling? Not so much. Someone doesn't like Dan's dad's thing, you know, because he just loves it.
Apparently not.
All right. So, first off, last year was our 10th season. In the second half of the season, I was trying to bring back people who hadn't been on the show in a while and felt it was worthwhile noting the specific episode number that they were on. But then I would also use that to then say how many
spreadsheet gargling right now.
Yep.
How many episodes have it been since they were on the show? And it wasn't.
I would like to say thank you to whoever actually wrote this comment, because we now have a new
term for it.
Keep going.
No, it's okay. And spreadsheet gargling, it's very important. It's just like mouthwash, you know, it's a very important thing.
Yeah.
And thank you, Mackie, for the sound effect, in case people didn't know what gargling sounded like. So,
I just had to clear the throat.
The idea being that that would then prompt banter about, wow, it's been that long since I've been on the show. Did you guys have to have that much recovery time before I was back on the show? They needed that much recovery time before they could be on the show. If there wasn't any banter with it, it doesn't mean that I cut what was said, but it was mentioned as part of an introduction, and then we moved on. I can certainly understand it wanting someone to stop listening to that segment, say, as part of the banter in the beginning, or to skip past, you know, like a minute or whatever when we're introducing a topic. But to say you're going to stop listening to an episode outright because of that, I just think you're hurting yourself. At the same time,
we've seen this previously. If you don't like that banter bit, just skip the first 5 minutes or something like that.
And that's usually where the references to how many episodes it has been someone was on came up, was either at the beginning or the end, not as part of a quote-unquote formal segment.
Because in case viewers haven't noticed, it is hard to get Dan to stop doing a certain thing once he likes starting doing a certain thing. So,
Dan will gargle.
If you tell him no.
He's going to gargle.
What I call the quantifiable metrics in terms of, okay, here's the median of how people think we connect with our show audience. That's still going to happen, but that's not going to be every episode. I tend to concentrate it in one episode or two. If someone else there wants more spreadsheet gargling, then just listen to the episode where we gargle spreadsheets more than once, and there you've listened to more spreadsheet gargling. You're welcome. Aim to please.
Okay.
Well, this one's not so anonymous. Or you can actually invite me to be the actual guest host, or I have to keep inviting myself to fill in for one of the regular hosts. Heart Dino.
Yeah.
I like the notion that you are not an actual guest co-host if you are filling in for a regular co-host. You are a guest host plus because you are filling in for a regular co-host. I believe you are above a traditional guest co-host and you're able to fill in for an absent co-host. So it's actually a compliment.
Now all the others are going to remember you said this.
Yep.
Get it right now.
He feels like a filler, not a, actual.
Well, first of all, you'd only be a filler if you were replacing Phil.
You have to fill in. Just troll. That's easy.
It's not just trolling.
There's never anything purposeful on my part thinking about I'm only going to ask Dino or anyone else who has been a guest on the show once to only come back on the show if they are replacing a regular co-host. There have been times when I have asked, maybe not you specifically, Dino, but other people in gaming groups saying, if anyone was interested in being on an episode, let me know. And then part of it comes to, oh, you might have accepted being on the show, but I have to say, oh, I'm sorry, I sent this invitation to multiple other people. Someone already said yes before you. Again, it just ends up being incidentally that your most recent appearances were filling in for someone who was absent. So I can't make a guarantee that your appearances will be when you are a quote-unquote actual guest co-host and not filling in for someone, but you'd just be happy to be on the show again, right? Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. I don't know why you keep talking about it.
Man, I sound kind of sassy as I respond to this, but
anyway. Kind of,
huh? To one other comment that wasn't so anonymous. CPM4001 doesn't want you to let that schmuck him back on the show.
Well, I'll just let the nice guy with the same handle back onto the show then.
Oh, yeah, there you go. We're not going to let the schmuck version, but we let the nice guy version back. There you go.
Now, how do you know that was actually him who signed it? Maybe somebody else signed it as him.
Well, the stick-out tongue, smiley face, and signed CPM4001.
Yeah, you could also write that as if you're also doing it.
Come on. None of us question it was Dino on the other one.
Well, because we know it's Dino.
Yeah, we IP traced him.
Yep, exactly.
Well, it didn't say Dino. It didn't say Dino Yoshi 13, so I guess it could have been.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It could have been an imposter. Yeah.
Could have been.
That we've also brought in as a
because we can always call him Dino Yoshi 13.
We only call someone by their full username when they're in trouble. It's just like at home. It's like,
Dino Yoshi 13, what have you been doing? Fun survey comments. Let's see.
More singing.
Yeah, I know. More Mackie topics and more singing. Well, more Mackie topics we can do. Singing, you don't need these guys singing, trust me.
I love how the one is just more singing, not with an exclamation point, but just a period. Just like very serious.
Well, singing is serious business.
Do it.
So.
Service.
And Mackie, it's not that people want singing, they need singing. They need singing in their life.
Go sing in the shower then.
They must soothe the soul with the sound of our voices.
Okay then.
Now Mackie's talking about us in the shower. Oh wow, this is great.
I was referring to telling the viewers to go sing in the shower if they need to sing so bad, but okay.
Oh, Mackie wants to see all the viewers in the shower.
No,
okay, well, all right. Now we're getting to the truth.
No, thank you. Well, told us we were doing great work, and they would love a weekly podcast, but wouldn't want to sacrifice the quality of content, which is true. If he had us doing this every weekend, podcasters would suffer, I'm sure.
I remember a suggestion years ago. This was even before we were doing the formal feedback survey, where someone said, why don't you record every other week, but then release it as two episodes. Do like a half hour this week and then a half hour the next week.
Because the odds something we were talking about would be obliterated by a patch are pretty decent.
That too. Well, that's going to happen anyways. But it's also the question of like, okay, what if we spent more than half an hour talking about something?
Yeah, there was an issue and they fixed it. Well, there went half the podcast.
And I could also see if we did that, if we recorded like this episode, I release half of it, say, next week, and then half of it the week after, I think there'd even be more questions of, why are you guys still talking about this? That's old news. I think it would just exaggerate the fact that we record every other week.
Possible. And then there's a bunch of random comments about, yay, good job, keep going.
Somebody was saying that they do generally enjoy, but once in a while it seems the hosts are a bit close-minded and like-minded, so they just feed off each other's narrow view of a topic. And also, they don't honestly remember every guest name, but they do enjoy listening to the different guest speakers.
I'll try to be more contrarian. I'll do my best.
Yeah. I just blame Mackie.
Yeah, I blame Mackie as well.
She makes us do it.
I don't make you do it.
What no one ever hears on the behind the scenes, but is Mackie telling us what we're supposed to be talking about?
We get this advice after the fact.
Yeah.
Like once the mistake's already made, yeah.
Yeah, but we don't actually listen to that advice, though.
Well, it's hard because it's
even if I was giving you guys advice, you wouldn't listen to it anyway. So this is like a redundant argument again.
Redundant argument again. Huh? Yep. Oh, and if you honestly don't remember everyone's guest name, that's where spreadsheet gargling would help. Okay. I went there. Yep, I went there.
Also, pointing out that most guests are just nameless, faceless people.
Oh.
Although I guess on an audio podcast, you're always going to be faceless, but
they're certainly not nameless. We do have them introduce themselves.
Yeah.
Somebody also wanted more discussion of the history in Civ. You know, the gameplay is great and all, but the reason Civ is different from other strategy games is the historical era-spanning backdrop with recognizable leaders.
Yeah, but then you get into historical arguments.
Yeah, unless you wanted like a leader spotlight for some of the leaders that aren't so well known to Western audiences or something.
Now we're getting into more of a history cast, political cast. Politicast, number one. If we were a general strategy podcast and we wanted to look at, say, let's talk about the different games that are available in the 4X genre for turn-based strategy, then that would make sense. I think we do some of this anyway, but something purposeful? No, I don't see us doing that just because it's a little bit beyond our scope. Not that we couldn't do it.
I'll skip the little dry, potentially. I mean, yeah, throwing in little history touches here and there as needed for the discussion. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
If we're having a discussion of, okay, so why are pikes not better than swords? Or historical of, well, swords actually aren't better than spears for the most part, and yada, yada, yada. Stuff like that would be useful for where historical stuff could pop up.
Yeah, where it's going to further our discussion of the gameplay, promoting, yes, this should be this way it is in gameplay because of this, or we're glad it's this way and not historical because of that, then that's also relevant.
Yeah.
And we've done that, and we'll continue to do that.
Some history helps. Little history here and there helps, rather than, like, a segment on history of, say, X-leader.
Yeah. Because then I can see someone say, I really like your show that's about the Civilization series, but I always skip this segment because you never actually talk about the game in that segment. It's all about the history. We're not here to serve that audience. Lots of podcasts that talk about history, for history's sake.
A lot of people have asked about, basically, more strategy talk, especially in-depth talks. I guess we got a little too unfocused and unserious for people while we were waiting for Civ 6, and we've only been playing it for a couple of months now, so we really haven't had, and we and the community haven't had as much of a chance to go through and go, well, this would be better, and this would be better, so we haven't had the topics to talk to you guys about that yet.
And if we were talking about strategy upon Civilization 6 release, as compared to now, it would be different. We knew that patches were coming. And patches were coming right at the time that we're talking about the release. Plus, we were coming up at the end of the year. We were looking for the feedback from the community. So there was a lot of stuff that was still getting settled in terms of strategy. So we will return to the strategy, more of the strategy, now that we don't have this month interruption because, oh, it's our Christmas break. So yes, there will be more of that. Unless, of course, they announce another Civilization title. And then we're just going to have to talk about that forever and a day. You know.
If they do that this year, I would be impressed.
Maybe a little horrified too, but yeah, it would be.
Yeah, more than a little horrified.
Yeah, I wouldn't be impressed in a good way, but I would be impressed.
The show is great. My lack of support on the Patreon is entirely due to my own financial situation. I wish I could afford to give you what you deserve. I hope you can keep the current regular co-host around. Your chemistry, enthusiasm, and experience with the game is stellar, and Top Gear has shown how far a product can fall when they lose the magic of a good core team.
I think it's worth mentioning, he talks about the core team. There has not been a change. I'm knocking on wood here as I say this. There's not been a change in regular panel on this show in 4.5 years. First off, the fact that you have a podcast that's old is decent. We are kind of an anomaly in the podcasting community in the sense that we record every other week as opposed to being a weekly or a monthly or a recurring podcast. But to not have a change in the regular panel where there are four people for 4.5 years is worth pointing out. And if you look at the history of the show, the next closest we had in terms of no interruptions was 2.5 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, awesome.
Was Mackie trying to sing there? Was that was close?
Well, usually it helps to clear your throat before you start singing, so I think so.
That's what she was going for.
I was going for more of the sing-song, we are awesome type of thing, not actual singing.
Oh.
Sorry to disappoint.
Oh, yep. Please. Mac can never disappoint. She's a woman that plays Civ. Hey.
Oh, we're back to this again. I thought this would be the year without that, but no, apparently not.
Well,
no.
You're not the only woman that plays Civ. That's as close as I'll go to that other meme that we have.
Okay, thank you.
For today.
No.
Also in feedback, still on the Christmas special from 2016. Yes, there was something good that came out of 2016, the 2016 Christmas special for Polycast. We had a number of requests for things for us to discuss on that special, but we just didn't have the time. The first one, chronologically, that came into the special that we did not talk about, John C. Nunn, discussion on optimum use of districts, which ones to build first and which to wait for. We have touched upon this in the past, but not anything specifically down to the strategy layer. To me, you're looking at primarily a combination of campus, commercial, industrial.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think there's more than three of them, so...
I said primarily.
Yeah, you just build other ones if you want the other victory conditions associated with them. Harbors are good, too, because harbors are basically another commercial district, so they're fine. That's four.
Or the only way off your island, depending.
Yes, possibly.
I mean, which ones to build first? Well, campus is going to come by pretty quickly, or about to come by pretty quickly. And I'm talking about the beginning of the game here, not necessarily later on in the game. This is the order.
Yeah.
First city, campus, and then I want to go to currency. I would like to get the boost to currency by finding someone to trade with, even if that means going out and founding a second city, which you should be doing anyway, and then trading between the two. Then get currency so I can get a commercial district, and then is it apprenticeship that gives us industrial districts, which is also on the path to education, which I like, to give a nice boost to the campus district, which I already have. That would be my initial priority for districts, regardless of individual circumstance and perhaps what civilization I am. And there might be a unique district that means I can construct it in half the time, for example, then that certainly comes into play as well. But just as a general statement.
As a general statement, I follow the AI's tech path.
Well, in this particular
not
case,
really, because you just need those. You don't need to do all the crap the AI does.
That general comment, like, I'll build them as they show up in my tech path. Okay. Just make them fun again.
Seeing as how if it shows up earlier in the tech path, then yes, I'm going to be constructing them before something else because I haven't researched it in the tech path yet, then yes, of course I'm going to be constructing them early, with the exception of holy sites. They are very, very situational. That's a whole separate conversation. Religion is not what it was in Civilization V. Even from the beginning when there was a separate religious mechanic, it was so much better in Civilization V than Civilization VI. You could have rose-colored glasses, which is what I did coming into Civ VI with religion. But otherwise, for optimal use of districts, you also want to be looking at the adjacency bonuses, which I know we talked about before the game was ever released because that was conversations coming out in previews and tips and whatnot.
I mean, really, what you build first depends on what your goal is. There's no optimal thou shalt always build this first. Because if you say, oh, I'm always going to build a campus first, and then it's like, oh, look, I've got no mountains.
In but the new I've got city, this wonderful it's usually location. Commercial or industrial. Usually one or the other in a new city. Yeah, once you have them available when you're building the new city, it's usually one of those two that you're building first.
Not necessarily.
I said usually.
Same as what I'm saying. I'm generalizing.
I usually go for the higher adjacency bonus one first. Usually. Unless, of course, it's a decent industrial location.
Unless you're going for like culture or some crap, are you not building commercial, industrial, or a campus?
Maybe when I want something other than just those.
But why would you want something other than those?
Maybe I want to build an encampment on the front line so that I can go get more stuff.
In a newly founded city?
Sure, why not? Start with encampment. It gives you culture and production from a specialist.
Once you finish it.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from, if it mattered, but right now it doesn't. Like, your front lines keep becoming further out, so.
Well, yeah.
Encampments are certainly useful, but I don't think I would invest in that in a new city unless it was actually under threat at all.
Depends. It also has that fun job of just being there.
Also, build a farm to just be there, or like a mine to just be there. Heck, you can even build, I don't know, a holy site to just be there.
Yep. Holy site first is still good.
Yeah. Not usually, but...
I disagree. I don't see campuses as that important.
The only reason you're considering the holy site early is because the better districts are not available, typically.
Yeah, depends. Get to commerce districts pretty quick.
Yeah, you can. I'll back up and ask you when the expected yield of going for religion is going to beat out trade routes.
Oh, whatever I feel like. It depends on what I'm going for.
No, I want to see which faith you're founding and resources investing you're getting that's going to outperform a commercial district on average.
Commercial district, single trade route. Yield-wise, it really depends on the map, because there's sometimes you can just go for early culture pantheon, plow through that way, and then not have to waste time on theater districts to actually get through the civics tree or anything else along that line. Or get to a certain...
Anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, certainly I want a pantheon. There's no question about that. But then the next step of a religion...
And if I want to go mass faith, then yeah, I can still pull off my, here, give me Jesuits.
What's the point of doing that? Why are you buying yourself early yields to get that?
Why am I? Because I played the long game.
I don't build theater districts, and I've been at the end of the culture civics tree, no problem. I don't see the issue here.
Well, part of it's a design problem on the culture.
Well, yes. Well, granted, we're arguing in the context of the game as it stands right now, where there is a design problem and there is not good balance between the districts. It shouldn't be an obvious choice, but in my mind right now, it's pretty obvious which is the best district.
Industrial district is okay. I mean, you need production, period. That's fine. Commerce district, I don't know. I mean, yes, they're okay.
I think it's easily the second strongest district. Easily.
Easily?
Easily.
Depends. You can go faith economy. I've done that. Faith economy, totally ignore production.
You can, but it's not as flexible as just dumping all your trade routes into wherever you need the production that doesn't have it otherwise.
But I mean,
you can faith by buildings. You can't faith by more industrial districts.
If you're actually doing it for trade route production, if that's the only thing you're aiming for, you don't actually get that much per trade route.
But you get a ton of them, and you can concentrate it and develop very quickly on the external cities.
Yeah, or I could just drop a single faith and holy site, max faith it, and just buy stuff with faith anywhere I feel like it. Then I don't have
to... buy units with faith. What are you buying buildings with faith?
Yeah, you buy buildings with faith. You go Jesuits.
Good luck with that, though. I mean, I guess you can, but like you said, it's a long setup. My gosh.
Isn't it that long of a setup?
I mean, cycling the faith income to the point where you can realistically constantly do that in border cities. You can. It's not impossible. But it's not as consistent or strong. But you can do it.
It's pretty strong, considering you can get mass faith going. And then if you get really mass faith, then you're just buying up all the GBs, not even bothering.
That is one advantage. Other stuff. That's true. And you can really host people with that by getting the good ones. I'm not sure how to quantify the value in that, but that is one thing where it's
pretty
helpful.
And I'm pretty sure faith is cheaper than gold when it comes to that. I think there's still a easier to access faith yield than gold yield when it comes to grabbing GPs. Partly also because there's less stuff to spend faith on than there is gold. So you always end up having more of it around.
And that's one thing that I like about gold. If I've got a commerce district and I'm generating lots of income, wherever I don't have that production, that can help offset that, where I can buy lots of things, even in newly found cities or even newly captured cities, which is a whole other separate side thing. Why can I do that? When I want faith, I want a pantheon. I want to be able to enhance what it is that I have around my capital and the cities that I am planning on having. So I just get myself Code of Law Civic. I go God King. I get the +1 faith and +1 gold in the capital. I'm really doing it for faith so I can get the pantheon. If a civilization spreads their religion to me, and I realize that as a follower, I could get, for example, hey, if I construct a holy site here, then I'm not going to have to invest in constructing this building within my campus, for example. I can just use faith to buy it. Then I'm going to go ahead and do that. But that's depending upon when is that AI going to spread their religion to me, number one, if they're going to spread it. Although, in the case of the AI, it's usually a question of when, never. Not if. And this is also kind of with the AI as well. They are so good with their faith and the freaking apostles, rather than this freaking whack-a-mole thing, which is a big push why I moved away from having my own religion. Fine, just spread it to me. You guys are really concentrating on that. That's fine. You go and you construct all those units. I'm going to continue with my commercial districts and my industrial districts and continue building up my infrastructure to be able to either produce and or buy the things that I need to do to then go and wipe you out. there's definitely more to talk about on this particular point, as has already been demonstrated in our conversation on this, but I think we should give the final word on this question from John C. Nunn. Discussion on optimum use of districts, which ones to build first, etc. to Mackie.
That's the final word, folks.
You were about to say why you agree with Phil and Dan and not Medjet. Oh, wait. What?
Yeah, I guess my capital tends to be a little bit different because sometimes I'll go ahead and do the Holy Site thing just so you can get that extra stuff. And campus is the next thing because that's usually next on the list of things you can get if I don't need to do an encampment. But then when you start getting to the secondary cities, yeah, industrial and commercial, depending on, you know, if there's like a conflux of river right there, you know, it's like, yeah, you put the commercial side down because like plus three or more sometimes. And if, also if you're close to the sea,
yeah, there's the, like, yeah.
Things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the city center and harbor is the best place for the commerce district, preferably in a triangle.
If the terrain is nice enough to let you do that.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, I haven't built much of theater and entertainment districts until, like, the cities get big, like, with the entertainment, until the cities get big and they get kind of cranky. And even then, it's only those really big cities that I'll do that in. I haven't done a culture game all the way through yet.
And for the crankiness, I find, oh, hello, entertainment district, even over a theater district from time to time.
Yeah, now, exactly.
Now, if I'm playing Greece, again, anytime I'm playing a civilization that's going to give me a discount on a unique district, I'm going to prioritize that more than I otherwise would have. District. Oh. I might even prioritize that in certain situations over any one of the initial three, whether it be a campus, industrial zone, or a commercial district.
Yeah. Well, I now post-patch, right? It's a little different.
True.
The districts aren't free anymore.
There's still a discount.
True, but still, if you're getting some discounts or that district because of the Civ you've rolled is going to give you some extra things, and you might want to prioritize those when you wouldn't normally.
I don't know. Optimum use of the district. I mean, really what it comes down to is adjacency bonuses.
Use districts?
Yes, use them, but also look for adjacency bonuses.
Yeah, take an account of the terrain. The sooner you get the commercial, the sooner you get the gold rolling.
It's not exactly like, I'm going to slap down this campus in the middle of nowhere because...
No, that's not going to work.
I have to. Yeah.
Find that little cove in the mountains, then slap down the campus. Or the middle of the rainforest. That works too.
Yeah. Depends on who you are. And again, all this stuff all depends on the civs, because a lot of the civs have adjustments based on their locations.
And if you can't get the adjacency bonus that you want for the district that you want anytime soon, then you go into forums and you complain about poor map generation. Mm. And the next...
Totally.
Wait, what was I saying? Huh?
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
What do we think is going to be in the first expansion?
Stuff that didn't make it into release. How about
or
that?
Downloadable content, yes.
That's not necessarily true. It might be stuff that was not even thought of prior to release, but it was...
Yeah, it's true. Oh, first expansion, entirely UI-based.
That wouldn't sell very well somehow.
It wouldn't sell well, but I would love to see the UI
fix. Yeah, we'd love to see some UI stuff, but we don't think that would be a great seller. I mean, obviously we can all guess more civs.
A scenario or two, maybe, that uses some of those new civs. There will probably be a couple mechanical features. That's usually what sells the expansions.
But what's
well,
the
they shouldn't be selling us UI. The UI needs to work on release. The major focus of the next patch. But
I'm sure there's plenty of people who have other plans. But you know what should be the major focus of the next patch? It should be the AI. So really,
and
it will
have some sort of theme.
The theme of the mechanics. And the mechanics,
no, the mechanics.
Of civs.
Gods and Kings was the theme of one of the expansions. It was Civ 5. So there'll be some sort of related... historical-ish theme. I know Civ's not historical, simulation, blah, 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 but...
So the question is, what will they expand on something that's already in, or are they going to slap in something else?
I can't even begin to envision what I think is going to be in the first expansion, because I can't yet envision fully what the game's going to be like, because we spend so much time, understandably so, talking about those issues that need to be addressed.
Try to fit more mechanics in, and while we still have things that could use a little fine-tuning.
Civilization 6, Beyond Earth 2.
What?
I mean, we had Civilization 4 Colonization, so, you know. It's about time they went back to that one.
Totally
well.
Different. Nope.
Lol.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us for Polycast episode 273. I am the main team, and today I was joined by the regular Stan Q.
I am cross-platform compatible.
As am I. Makalua?
Apparently not good at multitasking nor paying attention today. I need more coffee.
And Magin.
Yay, finally have interrupts.
Woo!
Which come with
Thanks
coffee.
Thanks for listening.
What's that? You sign up for a new internet service provider account and you get coffee?
Yeah. According to Mackie, that's how this stuff works.
We discussed this. Phil isn't as infamous for coffee addiction as you are, and you were here, so I was sort of the only coffee person around, so you got your interwebs back.
Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to coffee, I don't drink coffee, but I have smelled coffee, and I have bought coffee for other people, so that makes me coffee adjacent.
Have you smelled your coffee?
Coffee adjacent? Really?
Because you've smelled it.
Yep.
That's Mackie. Never mind. I thought that would be Lumps on Both.
Sorry. I was clearing my throat. Thank you very much. My allergies.
Don't say. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, man. Wait. Two pieces of feedback. I'm going to start with the shorter
one. Wait, it requires a separate account to post in the news?
Yes, it does. CFC has said they're going to work on integration, but you do have to have a separate account. You have to have a WordPress account for CFC in order to comment on the news, which is separate from your forum account.
The crap.
Which probably explains in part why there haven't been that many comments since they switched over.
Don't get religious units on a separate layer, please.
Well, that's a completely different discussion.
Yeah, I know. It's just when Dan mentioned it, it's just a little triggering. I don't mean for it to contribute to the discussion, but FFS, please put those on a different layer.
Everyone is completely honest about their identity online. I don't even know. Yep. That's why this is a thing. I mean, everyone knows Madjin's birth certificate says Madjin.
Totally.
As an example. And mine clearly says Dan Q.
True, the letters D-A-N and Q are on it.
Yep.
That's true.
That's slightly more true than the other one.
Yeah.
Oh, Mackie's on her phone. If you'd like to call Mackie, 555. 867-5309. Jenny moved out. You know, it's 2017.
Yep. She left. She's getting tired of you people.
Shorter comment. Dan and Phil should tell Maddie's wrong more.
I think we did that already this episode, so.
Yeah, I know.
Yay us. What was that phrase that you like to use, Magin? Something cities.
What?
Spreading cities on them? No, that's not it. Oh my gosh. It's annoying me. I mean, not you specifically, you know, in this moment. I'm trying to remember what it is that you said. Deconstructing, maybe it's deconstructing.
I have no clue what you're talking about anymore.
Well, the fact that you acknowledge anymore makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Speaking of triggering.
Trigger finger. There we go. Trigger finger.
Yeah, I'll show you my trigger finger.
No.
No. Also no.
Aki.
What? Yep.
It's you again.
Dang it.
I specifically assigned this to you, Mackie, because I remember last year when we called up the comments, Magin asked if you even had them open, and you said no. So, now I'm...
Joke's on you, I have it open.
Well, yeah, that's because I assigned the topic to you, so, yeah.
Computer, what are you doing? Oh, crap.
She dropped, I'm not kidding! Yes!
Did she drop Skype?
Yes, she did.
he will never, ever, ever read the comments.
Apparently not.
Ever.
Mackie's computer went, you broke our alliance to never read comments. Well then, I'm going to break your internet connection.
The computer knows it's all about singing.
Whatever that was bad, dude.
Yeah, well, you know. Welcome to Polycast Real World Edition.
Record date?
January 21st, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.